because they had some that I had on yesterday. First, the name of the man whose concepts and thoughts we're largely giving attention to in these 3 days, in this period, Henry Nouwen, and also the three movements of Christian faith that we're trying to cover in the 3 days. Yesterday we talked about the movement from loneliness to solitude. Tomorrow the movement from illusion to prayer. Today the movement from hostility to hospitality. One thing which was presupposed in what I said yesterday, but which I maybe ought to make very explicit, is that these are movements, at least as we're understanding them, within the Christian faith. They are not movements from outside the faith into the faith. The importance of that, I think, is that we realize and we remember, even when we are in loneliness, that we are not somehow by that placed outside the Christian faith. That is, we are not Christians when we are at peace and whole and healthy and hospitable and praying only. But we are Christians, or we can be Christians, even in loneliness, even in hostility, even in illusion. Understanding, however, that the impact of the gospel upon us does not encourage us to stay there, but encourages us to move. And it's that movement that we're talking about. You'll recognize this quite easily, I think, as from something that we all learned early on, that Christians are simul justus et peccator. I can probably even use the Latin phrase, and most of you know it. We're at the same time saints and sinners. We're not Christians only when we're saints. So, these movements that we're talking about, between various sets of poles, are the movements of Christians. And the question, the basic question that's written over all of this and that we're encouraging you and all of us to reflect on in this time, is the very important, profound, simple question: what does it mean for me to live life in the Spirit of Jesus Christ? Yesterday we talked very much about our relation to ourselves, how we think about ourselves, how we feel about ourselves, how we understand what is going on within ourselves, how we take it, how we respond to it. And life, at least our voluntary, our volitional life, is very much response. I don't think I've seen it around here, but one of these kinds of posters somewhere has a message on it that goes something like, what is important is not so much what happens to us, but how we respond to what happens to us. We emphasized yesterday that our life is, as H. Richard Niebuhr puts it, more acted upon than acting. That is, there's an awful lot of stuff in our inner and our outer life that we do not control, that we did not produce. Walt was talking about that yesterday in terms of the givens. We did not choose to be born, we did not choose to be male, we did not choose to be 20th century, whatever. And that could be drawn out for a very long time, as I think we can each do for ourselves. The question today is, how do we relate to other people? How do we relate to other people? And yesterday I asked you to just reflect for a moment on whether there had been any significant, noticeable changes in your life in the past year or so. You might reflect on that question now a bit in terms of your relationship with others. How's it been? How's it been developing? Has there been movement? What's the movement been like? How do you understand yourself in relation to others? How do you understand others in relation to yourself? And again, we're dealing with two very interesting words. Terribly similar, aren't they? Hostility, hospitality. There's an awful lot of common letters and common vowels, common consonants and common vowels in that. And yet there's a decidedly different taste, a decidedly different feel. Let me set you up then with another kind of question. What are you best at? What can you do better than any of your friends? What are you good for apart from, over and above the people about you? I think we have a deep desire to stand out, to be different, and our culture encourages this upon us very much. Our culture is full of stars and full of record breakers. People are striving to excel at something, not just to be good at something, but to excel at it. We have all kinds of contests. We have not just stars, but superstars. We have to get all of our stars together and see who excels among them. We try to find out, some years ago, we tried to find out who excelled in swallowing goldfish. We still sometimes have contests to find out who excels in eating the most McDonald's hamburgers or the most pizza or who can drink the most beer. Contests. We have contests. We like to note superlatives. This is the longest hike at Holden. This is the highest tower or the highest mountain in the area or in the world. This is the longest tunnel. That was the worst flood or the worst forest fire in our history. The heaviest snowstorm, the largest crowd, superlatives. And if we were there or if we saw it, significant. It's one of the ways people become noticed and become famous, by excelling, by standing out, by relating to something that is outstanding. And so we are seduced by that, and that's why I said I was kind of setting you up with the question. We are seduced by that into thinking that our value lies in what makes us different from all others. But perhaps our growing up, our becoming mature, our moving toward maturity, consists rather in our becoming part of the human situation and taking our place within the human community, not standing apart from it, and especially not standing above it and over it. Think about that contrast, if you will. What is the movement of growth, of Christian growth? What is the movement of Christian maturity? The suggestion here is that the movement is not one from weakness to power, from being a common, ordinary human being to becoming a special, unique human being who stands out among his fellows. It's not the movement whereby we are constantly having to compare ourselves with everybody else and to stand apart from them. You see how devious this sometimes gets, because people who can't stand out by standing above will sometimes stand out by standing below and try to commit the most heinous crime or engage in something which is really despicable, but it makes the news and everybody now knows who this person is, and so we become famous. I'm determined to become famous. If I can't do it by moving up, I'll do it any way I can. The movement is not, to use some of the things that Walt was talking about just a few moments ago, that of moving from becoming a servant to becoming a lord. But it is rather the movement from closedness to openness. From being closed to being open. From being fearful and defensive about myself. Being open. Not fearful. Vulnerable. Not defensive. Openness to other people. Openness to the events of my life and to the happenings within my own life. Openness to the world of history and the world of nature that is around us. We really can take it in. We can celebrate it. We can stand by it as a fellow creature, as a brother, a sister, as a friend. The movement is toward openness and receptivity then, rather than toward conquering. And just as I say that, I think of the whole shift in our ecological understanding that's taken place, that's been forced upon us in recent years. Where once we thought of ourselves very much as the masters of nature, it was putty in our hands, it was clay for us to shape and to mold and to do with as we, and I'm tempted to use an expletive, pleased. Now we see that it won't stand for that, and it will fight back, and it will spit back, and it will blow its pollution back, and now we are finding a new way of relating, and it is one of openness and receptivity, and it is one of saying, what is this? And what is this good for in its own right? What is the dignity of this thing in itself? Not just what may I do with it? How may I use it or abuse it or misuse it? But what is it? And so St. Francis has become something of a contemporary saint again, because he's one who stood among the animals and even the vegetation of our world and personified them. These are my brothers, these are my sisters, and I must be open to them, and I must listen to them, and I must respect them. That's the movement that we're suggesting is somewhat the movement toward growth and the movement toward maturity. We see this movement in God's own movement toward us. He comes in Christ not simply to impress us with his otherness, his holiness, his unapproachable power and unapproachable wisdom, though that's always a part of our experience of God, because that's who God is, the one who is somehow wholly other. But the whole movement of God, you see, in his revelation to us, is out of that holy otherness, down to meet us where we are, to join us, to be with us, to stand alongside of us, to be our comforter, the one who stands by our side and makes us strong and brave to be who we are. Walt said he's the one who comes to take our fate upon himself. And so to be with us, and even to be for us. How Jesus is Lord is that he uses his power, not against us, not upon us, but in our behalf and for us. So we see this movement from weakness to power, but from closeness or unapproachableness to openness and being with and for. We see that very movement in the movement of God himself toward us. You think easily of Paul's, whatever it was he was apparently quoting in his letter to the Philippians, about how the Christ did not have to cling to his prerogatives, but was able to let that slip through his fingers and to become fully like us, to become a human being, to become a servant, even to the point of taking death upon himself. The humility of God in Jesus Christ. So the movement of maturity of life in the Spirit is not from weakness to power. It is not a movement toward conquering, but it is a movement away from fearful defensiveness to openness, to being open and receptive. That is to say, it is the movement from hostility to hospitality. Hostility. Think about it, get the feel of it, reflect on it in your own experience, in your own world, in your own life. Hostility. We have little difficulty in finding it, I think, in locating it. All kinds of fearful, aggressive, defensive, hostile people that we know, and they help us to know ourselves. To know our own fearful aggression, defensiveness, hostility. We anxiously cling to our property. We are suspicious of many of the people who come into our lives. Maybe hard to say that at Holden. Kind of an atmosphere around here where we're not suspicious of anybody who comes into our life. There's a great level of trust and openness here. Maybe you have to move for a time out. Maybe some of you don't experience that here. I don't know. But in daily life back home, we're easily suspicious of somebody who comes into our life for the first time. We wait to see what is there, but we're not always terribly open, and properly so. Our experience confirms upon us the unwisdom of that. Maybe Walt's story about his man-to-man experience. It's that kind of experience that makes us wonder whether we will be vulnerable like that again. Maybe vulnerable is the wrong word. Can we be wiser somehow next time? But we're not sure that we can be. We're often looking for the enemy. Somebody's out to get us, and I want to know who it is. I want to be able to identify him. I can't believe that everybody's for me. That would be a beautiful way to live. I'd like to find that community. Could really take away a lot of my fearfulness and my loneliness, my anxiety, but I can't believe that that's possible or that that's true. Maybe the Christian church is that way. I think I'll join the church. How many young people have done that? Moved into the church and invested the church with messianic expectations, as we were talking about yesterday. And how proper it seems, the place that proclaims the Messiah. And yet how disappointed they have often been then. Find out that not even everybody there can really be trusted. We have bad experiences. We're taken. We're used, even there. The world is full of strangers, and we know this strangeness within ourselves, all kinds of strangeness. We become easily estranged from our past, from our culture, from our country. We become estranged from our neighbors, from our friends, and even from our family. Painful. And perhaps we know also estrangement from our deepest selves. Estrangement within ourselves, which brings us very close to talking about estrangement from the ground of our being, from the creator of our life, estrangement from our God. A stranger is a person who is in painful search of a hospitable place, a place where life can be lived without fear, and where community can be found. But most of us have very ambivalent feelings towards strangers. Somebody knocks on the door one day. We've never seen him before. He's hungry and he has no place to stay. He needs food and shelter. How do you feel? And what will you do? Well, some words pop to mind. I was a stranger and you took me in. I was hungry and you fed me. I was naked and you clothed me. And we say, yes, those are words that ground my life. That's who I am. Maybe I must respond to this stranger in this way. And yet we can't help wondering, We don't want to be naive Christians. We want to take in, but we don't want to be taken in. And that's the ambivalence that runs through us. And how we respond in a given situation may depend on which of those prevails, you see. And even when it's all done, we'll have some thoughts about it, some second thoughts about it, and we'll reflect and we'll evaluate, and we may think we did the right thing or the wrong thing. We put locks on our homes because we're afraid of strangers. We put security guards in the subways and safety officials in our airports because we're afraid of strangers. Our cities have armed police, our country has a military. We go away to Holden for 3 weeks or 6 weeks, and now we drive into the driveway and we take the key out and we unlock the door and we walk through the house. And what are our feelings and what are we looking for? Do we not wonder whether a stranger has been there since we left? And if he has, what he may have done? There are other forms of strangeness. Reflect for a moment on how you respond to someone who is a different color. Or who speaks a different language. Or who dresses differently. And who, upon just a little conversation, obviously is living in a very different lifestyle from our own. It's an element of strangeness there, estrangement. There's something that prevents us from being as close together and as much one as we perhaps would really like to be. We become fearful, defensive, maybe hostile. Or else we work very hard to overcome it. And some of us, you know, have worked at some of those things for some time, and maybe very frequently we do overcome it. But just in the fact that we have to work to overcome, we acknowledge the strangeness, the barrier, the separation, the wall that is there. The assumption is that the stranger is a potential danger, and we wait for him now to prove himself and to assure us that he can be trusted. We wait for him to change our mind about him as he opens himself and reveals himself to me to the extent that he is able, to the extent that he is willing. Still other forms of hostility. Think of teammates on a baseball team, a football team, a basketball team. Think of classmates. Taking a test. I don't know how it is today, but I know that when I went to school, after we came in from a test, if there were 30 people in the class, the professor would put down the 30 grades, you know, 98, 297s, 196, 595s, and so on down. And then he began to break them off. And then he'd write A minus, B minus. And you know, if you were having a little difficulty in that class, you knew you didn't get much above a 70 if you were lucky, and then you saw a 98, 96. You see, 10 people in the 90s, what enemies they are. What a threat. If only those people weren't there, my 70 wouldn't look so... We become competitors, you see. Classmates. Actors on a stage, acting out scenes of great sympathy, great feeling, great intimacy, and going behind stage and taking on a new face and a new feeling toward each other. Looking at the reviews the next morning to see what is said about him, about her, about me. and hoping that I will excel, and taking secret delight in their being put down, criticized. Do you know that in yourself, even if you're not an actor? The point in looking at all of these situations, obviously, is not to see what happens somewhere else, but to have windows opened into what's happening within ourselves. Other people become threats to our personal or our professional safety. It doesn't just happen on stage. Doctors, MDs, ministers, clergymen, how easily they become threats to one another. Lawyers, social workers, accountants, engineers, teachers. Keep going and put your profession, your occupation in. And try to see the shape and to get the feel of the strangeness and the hostility that can be and that is where you are and where you work. Hospitality. Henry Nouwen has a Dutch background, and he draws out two German words here, a German and a Dutch word, to help us to see the meaning of hospitality. The German word, anybody know what the German word for hospitality is? Wrong place to ask, maybe. Gastfreundschaft. Gastfreundschaft. Freundschaft, the word for friendship. Friendship to a guest. Hospitality is friendship which doesn't bind. But he says that the Dutch word, and I don't know if this is the Dutch word or the German equivalent, is more Gastfreiheit. Gastfreiheit. Freiheit, the freedom. The freedom of the guest. Friendship is freedom, giving freedom, without leaving alone. I can invite you into my house and then walk out and leave you alone, and that's hardly hospitality or Gastfreiheit. I can be your friend, but I can be such an anxious friend and so anxious to shape you into my style of thought, my style of living, or whatever, that I'm not really a friend, but I'm binding. Gastfreundschaft, friendship without binding. Gastfreiheit, freedom without leaving alone. Hospitality is giving freedom. It is creating free space for the stranger. And that's the second movement in the life of the spirit. The movement from hostility to hospitality. We offer open and hospitable space where the stranger can cast off his strangeness and become our fellow human being. We notice immediately the importance of the first movement, the one we talked about yesterday, the movement from loneliness to solitude. How can we be hospitable when we are lonely? Loneliness is anxious for itself. Loneliness clings. Loneliness does not so easily create free space for the other. Henry Nouwen tells the story of the student who went to the university and needed a place to live and looked around town and found a fairly elderly couple who were looking for someone to live with them. And it was a good deal for him, and it appeared to be a good deal for them, and so he moved in with them, and after only a few days found out that he was caught up in their loneliness. That the reason they had wanted a student to live with them is because they were lonely, and that they were not doing much for each other's loneliness. That is, there was some hostility between them because there was frustration at each other. We talked about this yesterday. When we expect the other to take away our loneliness and he doesn't, We become disappointed and we may become angry and we may become very hostile. This student now moved into a home that was full of that kind of loneliness and hostility, and each of them was constantly grabbing at him, constantly trying to claim him, sometimes to claim him against the other. And the student, you can imagine his own feeling. He was not able to help them with their loneliness very much. We talked yesterday about the way in which we really cannot take away another person's loneliness. The student, you can imagine his own feeling. He was not able to help them with their loneliness very much. We talked yesterday about the way in which we really cannot take away another person's loneliness. He was also not able to do his studies, to get on with his work at the university. His decision before very long was that he had to leave. He had to find another place to live. He entered not into a situation of hospitality. There was not free space for him to relate and to work. But there was loneliness there, and it was clinging, and it was grabbing, and it was confining and binding. It's difficult for us to create free space for the stranger without solitude. We are most at home when the host gives us the freedom to come and go as we will and doesn't claim us for his or her or their own needs. The freedom to come and go as we will. People who are lonely, who are fearful, who are anxious, insecure, doubting, have a very hard time offering free space to strangers. They're too uptight. They're too much in need of reassurance and support themselves. They're easily suspicious. They're very jealous. And they quickly become hostile when they're disappointed. They receive their guests with great hopes and expectations. Ah, so-and-so is coming to visit. How great. And they let them go with disappointment and even anger. I had expected something more. I had hoped for something else. And now we reflect on what happened. Those who are at home in their own house, who have found the center of their life and who live in it, can invite others and share with them the rest and the silence that they have found for themselves. They can create friendly, open space without suspicion and hostility. Here the guest is free to be himself. Here the guest is free to reveal who he is, to reveal his real self. Here people can be open to each other, and when they are open to each other, they can bring new life to each other. I don't know how the word hospitality feels or sounds to you. It's a fairly ancient word, and it's a word that in many respects has lost much of its power and much of its meaning. It may suggest to us a kind of soft, sweet kindness or kindliness, and it's the sort of thing that sounds fairly trivial, fairly superficial, and something that we really want to get beyond. But it's a key word, and I think it's a very fertile word for Henry Nouwen, and it has been also for me. It's been a rich and a useful concept for me to think about myself and for me to think about my encounter with other people and with other groups. I can, in fact, spend some time with somebody and ask myself whether I have both offered and received hospitality. And that means, was there free space? Did I give free space? Did I listen? Did I let that person be? And did I receive it? Or was I squeezed into a mold and pushed into a tunnel and told to dance this dance and to sing this tune and to relate always to his concepts or his ideas or his standards? If I am a theologian, was the conversation free for my own system, or was everything I said constantly being squeezed through his? I mentioned something and he said, it fits down here at this point in the system. Now, and suddenly he was talking about my idea and I didn't recognize it anymore because I didn't know where he had located it. Well, that's theology, but that's many other disciplines as well, I'm sure. We can experience one another in terms of hospitality. I experience groups very much that way. I go away from a group and I say, that really was a hospitable group. Or I say, gee, there was little hospitality there. And what do I mean? I mean something like, there was space for me to move. There was space for me to get in. Or I mean, there was no such space. Before he stopped talking, she started because she was afraid she wouldn't get in otherwise. And I couldn't get a word in edgewise. And I feel frustrated and I maybe feel angry. Groups can be hospitable. They can be sensitive to the people who are there. And they can, you know, not lay it on somebody. Well, Joe, you haven't said anything. Don't you have something you want to say? Maybe Joe doesn't. That's okay. But they can make sure that the reason Joe isn't saying anything is not that they're not giving him any space. Groups can be hospitable. And the larger the group, I'm sure we can see how hospitality applies there. We talked yesterday about the United States and its reception of Vietnam refugees. Hospitality. Do we invite them in to live their life and to do their thing, or do we invite them in to become like us? And that's the anxiety, isn't it? Some of us would like to see some of them go back, not because we don't want them, not because we don't like them, not because this is ours and we don't want to share it with them, but because we really don't want to make them over into us. We really don't want to think that we're where it's at, and those poor Vietnamese. One of the concepts that was bandied about a lot then was the nuclearity of the family in our society, which isn't really true there. There, they're part of a whole big family, and to pull a person from another culture in another country out of that and to set him down in our strange culture and then with a strange lifestyle where the family is pretty much an entity in itself and the relations with the larger family are not nearly as, how terribly threatening and bad, harmful that could be. So, hospitality, the free space we give the other to be who he is, to become what he can. Hospitality is a very big word. It doesn't just talk about how many visitors did you have in your home this last year. But it talks about a fundamental attitude that gets expressed in all kinds of behavior. Hospitality is the creation of a space where a stranger can enter and become a friend rather than an enemy. Hospitality is being present to people in dialogue. Really being present to them. Not being withdrawn. Not standing back from them. Really being present, but being present in dialogue. Open to hear what they have to say. And open to speak what you have to say. Hospitality is not attempting to change people, but allowing free space where change can take place on its own and as it will. Hospitality is not imposing ourselves or our books or our values or our systems or our gods on another, but offering freedom and opportunity for the other to choose his own books, values, systems, and to commit himself to his own God. And what a wonderful thing it is then when we discover that we both have a God who embraces us all in our sameness and in our variety. But to force that, to impose that, how inhospitable that can be. Hospitality wants the stranger to sing his own song, to speak his own language, to dance his own dance, to follow his own vocation. It's not a subtle invitation for you to become like me, to sing my song, to speak my language, to dance my dance, and to follow my vocation. But hospitality isn't easy. Imagine a panic-stricken mob of people and a policeman coming into that mob to try to clear a path so that the ambulance can get to the victim. Hospitality has to clear that kind of a path. There are all kinds of things that need to be pushed out of the way. All kinds of things that need to be cleared out. Our fear, our frustration, our impatience, our competitiveness, our rivalry, and the list is really endless. What are the enemies of hospitality in your life? What are the things that need to be cleared out before you can give free space to the stranger? Might be very useful if we could just identify some of those things for ourselves. But really, we're afraid of empty space. And that's why we try to keep it full. We try to keep ourselves busy. Then we don't have to fear the strangers who are trying to get attention from us. We don't have to deal with the hard questions about our life that want to come to the surface. I think we all know people who are apparently too busy to have room for us. And we really don't try to get in then. We just stand back and let the person be. But I suspect that we all also know some people who are very, very busy and who have had space for us. And now just turn it on yourself and ask about your own busyness and the image that you give to others. Do people not even think of trying to get into your life because you're obviously too busy? Or are you very busy, but not too busy to open the door and to say, come in, and to really mean it, and to be present in openness and in dialogue to the stranger who comes in? We frequently rush to fill the empty space with words and actions. We have a hard time knowing how to take silence. We talked yesterday about the clatter and the chatter and the empty superficialities. When you are a guest in a home, or when you are a host to someone who is a guest in your home, how do you take the silence? Uncomfortably. I mean, we haven't seen each other in so long. There must be something that we must talk about. Let's see, what can it be? You sit at the table in the dining hall. You meet someone, and you talk for a few minutes, and you get acquainted. Suddenly there is silence. How do you feel? Is it okay? Can you let it be? Can you be patient in the face of it? Or must there be chatter? Must there be talk? Sometimes hosts talk and entertain their guests constantly. You're very tired when you leave. And they are too. Have you ever picked up the phone and had somebody say, I know you're very busy, but... What would happen, you think, if you'd say, oh no, I'm completely free today, tomorrow, all week, in fact? The person at the other end might have some second thoughts about calling you. This person doesn't have enough to do. This person isn't busy enough, must not be important enough, must not be involved and engaged enough. I ought to rethink my reason for calling. I think part of what's different about our life here at Holden is that it's less busy. There at least is no television. There is no telephone to interrupt. Most of us, it seems to me, are not reading newspapers these days, and we're not sure whether the world is still going on out there or not. There's no television. We like that, I suspect, many of us at least, but initially I was a bit uncomfortable with it. It took me a while to get used to it. And maybe I'm not fully comfortable with it even yet. We like to stay occupied. And on top of our occupations come our preoccupations. You know the meaning of the word. With what are you preoccupied? What is your preoccupation? What are your preoccupations? Anxiety about yourself? Concern about where your business is going or how your career is going? Anxiety about your marriage to be, or past or present? That which you carry around with you constantly, which is the thing that keeps buzzing through you even when you don't consciously attend to it, when you don't say, now I'm going to think about this for 5 minutes, but it's there as you walk the path or as you brush your teeth or as you take a shower. We're preoccupied with so many things, and so the space and the time is not free. It's not open to new ideas and experiences. Our preoccupations help us to maintain the world that we already have. Our preoccupations prevent revolutionary change from taking place. In my preoccupations, I maintain the world that is, and I work very hard to keep it that way or to move it in the direction of my own idolatrous goals and visions and hopes. I might relax and see what would happen. I might let my preoccupations fall aside We all have done this for a time and perhaps experienced how creative a thing it can be. Some new thoughts begin to come in. We begin to have new ideas. We begin to see our life in the family or our life in the business in a wholly new way. And the things that we have been anxious about now seem very trivial, and we really need not be anxious about them anymore. We can let them go. And we see some new goals and some new directions. But preoccupations keep that all cluttered up and keep the world as it is. There's a conversation between Carlos Castaneda and Don Juan. Some of you are familiar with those writings. Don Juan, the Yankee Indian that Carlos met and with whom he carries on a conversation and who comes to the point of revolutionizing and changing his life, but not without some great struggle. And the conversation goes something like this. Carlos says to Don Juan, "How can I do better at living in accord with your teaching?" Don Juan replies, "You think and talk too much. You must stop talking to yourself." "What do you mean?" "You talk to yourself too much. You're not unique at that. Every one of us does that. We carry on an internal talk. Think about it. Whenever you are alone, what do?" Carlos says, "I talk to myself." "What do you talk to yourself about?" "I don't know. Anything, I suppose." "I will tell you what we talk to ourselves about. We talk about our world. In fact, we maintain our world with our internal talk." "How do we do that?" "Whenever we find ourselves, whenever we finish talking to ourselves, the world is always as it should be. We renew it, we kindle it with life, we uphold it with our internal talk. Not only that, but we also choose our paths as we talk to ourselves, and then we repeat the same choices over and over until the day we die, because we keep on repeating the same internal talk." "How can I stop talking to myself?" "First of all, you must use your ears to take some of the burden from your eyes. We have been using our eyes to judge the world since the time we are born. We talk to others and to ourselves mainly about what we see. The world will change as soon as we stop talking to ourselves and are prepared for that monumental jolt." "What do you mean, Don Juan?" "The world is such and such or so and so only because we tell ourselves that that is the way it is. If we stop talking, if we stop telling ourselves that the world is so and so, the world will stop being so and so. At this moment, I don't think you are ready for such a momentous blow. Therefore, you must start slowly to undo the world." Well, organization people may have difficulty appreciating that, but listeners to Jesus Christ really should not. He tells us how our worries and our anxieties prevent the new world from coming. Matthew chapter 6, "Don't be anxious, don't worry about tomorrow. Set your heart on his kingdom and his righteousness." So creating free space is not very easy in our occupied and preoccupied society. But if we expect healing and new life, we need an open space where something new, something different can happen to us. Hospitality is a very important attitude for all of us, I think. We can't change the world. We can't change other people. But we can become more and more persons who offer space where people are encouraged to disarm themselves, to lay aside their occupations and preoccupations, and listen with attention and care to the voices that are addressing them from outside and from inside. There's the story about the Japanese Zen master who received a university professor, served him tea, pulled out the cup, poured, and kept pouring and kept pouring and kept pouring, and the professor finally said, "It's over full, no more will go in." And the master said, "Like this cup, you are full of your opinions and speculations. How can I show you Zen unless you first empty your cup?" I'm sorry that we went to the bell. I know that you're anxious. No, you're open and free for coffee. Going to fill the cup so that you can empty it. I'll stay if anybody wants to ask anything or say anything. Tomorrow we'll talk about the movement from illusion to prayer, and that will be the final movement that we'll be discussing this week.